grass, ganja, joint, doobie, doo, chronic, ace, lobo, loco, loveboat, bud, buddha, blunt, pot, pat, pin, chiba, chiba, 420, and hashish, or hash for short. It's all marijuana.
This is Marijuana Media.
Come in.
All right, welcome along everybody to Marijuana Media, and Chris Fowley, you've brought a friend, a couple of friends today.
Indeed. Thank you very much. And today we have in the studio with us Dr. David Bierman, who is a medical doctor from California with over 22 years experience prescribing medical cannabis, right since the very beginning, 1996, when it all began. And he's here promoting his new book, Cannabis Medicine, which is a guide to the practice of cannabinoid medicine. So it's pitched at doctors, and really interesting, really good timing for this sort of thing to happen, and talking tonight at AUT.
I like it. It's not a big book. It's only a centimetre thick. I can get my head around that.
Ooh,
that's good.
Densely packed, though. And so, David, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be back in New Zealand.
All right, you were here last year, weren't you?
I was here two years ago. Tori Catherwood, who's a sixth-year student in medical school, was kind enough. She and Victoria Davis and Sue Gray arranged a tour for me. And this tour is every bit as good as the one was 2 years ago. I think New Zealand, the people here are marvelous. The government could be a little bit more marvelous, but it's way ahead of the government in the United States.
Hey, David, just on the beginnings of things back in the day in America, you're saying, was it 1996? Is that what you're saying?
Well, 1996 is when cannabis was legalized for medical purposes in California, also in Arizona, but the Arizona legislature was able to block it. And actually, you guys have given me a little more credit than I deserve, because I started practicing cannabinoid medicine in 2000, a couple of years afterwards. Right. But it was still pretty hairy.
I was about to say, what was it like? Was it just...
The Medical Board of California really went after almost all of the doctors. When I started, I was one of three doctors practicing in Southern California. And, you know, there's millions of people that live in Southern California.
Right.
And within a short period of time, the other two doctors had lost their license, and the Medical Board wanted to subpoena my medical records. I eventually sued them and won in what's called a published opinion that said, hey, if the medical board wants to subpoena your records over the objection of the patient, they actually have to have a reason. They can't go on a fishing expedition. You know, when I won the case, I thought, boy, this is really earth-shattering stuff. And it's just common sense.
Yeah,
you know?
So it's just like a general standover they try to do on you, and you're like, actually, no, I'm going to...
Well, they didn't understand what the appellate court said is they didn't understand the legalization proposition. They didn't understand my letter of recommendation. They didn't understand the limits of their own enabling legislation, and they didn't understand the Constitution of the state of California. Otherwise, they didn't make any problems. And they told him to take their subpoena and stuff it.
Fair enough.
Now, David, you're down here talking about this new book. What do you think is in store for the New Zealand doctors that are going to be looking to perhaps prescribe cannabinoids to patients? What do they need to know, essentially? Where do we go? What do people need to find out?
Well, I thank you for asking that question. But one of the things I want to say that they will find from getting into the cannabinoid medicine arena is it will reignite their enthusiasm for being physicians and reignite their fervor over being healers. And what they'll find is that they have an amazing doctor-patient connection. That when your patient comes in and tells you, look, I've been using cannabis for several years and it really helps my pain and whatnot, and the doctor looks at them and listens to them and treat them like they would any other patient, you have a patient for life, Doc. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have actually carried out your role as a physician in relating to your patient as another human being. And I can tell you that another thing that the doctors here will do is they will learn a lot from their patients. I know in the medical school I went to in the States, the University of Washington up in Seattle, they said if you have a chronic patient and you listen to them, they will tell you how to treat them. Mm. And if you have a patient that's been using cannabis, they will tell you how to treat them, and they will also teach you about various kinds of conditions that you never thought that cannabis was useful in treating. I mean, I have never treated people with such serious illnesses as I have since I started doing cannabinoid medicine 20 years ago. And I mean, in some ways, I think doctors should know that cannabis is almost too good for its own good, because it's central to homeostasis, and that means that it's useful in dealing with almost all of the body's organ systems. And a lot of doctors are concerned because plants are complex, and they are. But we've only had single molecule manufactured pharmaceuticals since 1897, and I think we did reasonably well before that. We actually treated some things as well as we do now, except everybody's mother and their grandmother knew how to do it. So I think in some ways, you know, the doctors need to take a look at the history of medicine and the roots of medicine. I guess the other thing that the physicians have to look forward to, and then I'll shut up and let you get on to another question, is I think that they'll need to look forward to learning about the endocannabinoid system. And that's really one of my messages here, is that in order to understand how cannabis works as a medicine, and in order to help your patients who are coming in more and more frequently asking you about cannabis, you need to know about the endocannabinoid system, and you should. It's the largest neurotransmitter system in the human brain. So shouldn't we know about that?
Wow.
And I know in the States, there was a little survey that was done by Dr. David Allen, a cardiologist who is a proponent of medicinal cannabis. And he did it in 2014, and he found that only 13% of American medical schools even taught about the endocannabinoid system, let alone discussing the medical benefits of cannabis. So I guess I'd tell the doctors, keep your mind open, keep your eyes open and your ears open. You're on for a wild ride, and the sooner that you get into this, I think the happier you're going to be about why you're still practicing medicine.
It must be, and it should be exciting for doctors to have a new tool that they can just sort of go to town with and figure out and apply in different ways, and
right?
I think it is. I mean, I think that the those of us who consider ourselves cannabinoid medicine specialists are pretty proud of what we know. And we're also a little bit concerned about some of the docs who jumped in this mainly for the money. You know, hello, how are you? Give me the money. Here's your recommendation. And so we formed an organization called the American Academy of Cannabinoid Medicine. And I think we have a pretty impressive board of directors. We have a fellow who's on the faculty at the University of California in Riverside, who's a psychiatrist, have a rehab physician in the University of Washington, have the former associate director of Nixon's President Special Action Office on Drug Abuse Prevention. And, you know, the list goes on in terms of the credentials of our doctors. In other words, the idea is that we want other people in the medical community and also any politician who can read to realize that there are real doctors with real credentials who have real academic assignments that understand that this is important stuff. And our idea, or what we hope to do, is to get the practice of cannabinoid medicine recognized as a recognized subspecialty, like, say, pain management or weight control, and to get other physicians in the profession to recognize that this is something useful. I think where we're at in the States, and it could be the same thing here in New Zealand, about the same place that acupuncture was about 30 years ago.
Right. That kind of creeps me out. I was actually talking about acupuncture the other day.
Yeah,
so I guess I can understand how people feel about marijuana if I think acupuncture is a bit weird.
Well, but but acupuncture was very much questioned in the medical community, the mainstream medical
community. Very Eastern and whoa, what's this?
Ooh, and how does it work? We need more research, the usual kind of stuff. So I think what you're seeing with cannabis now is, I mean, there were 20 years ago when we some of us started, we were just the first teeny-weeny drips. And now I think we have a slight, small crack in the wall and the water dripping out of that. And I think very soon that crack will become a hole and Probably in 10 years, we'll see it gushing out and the wall come crashing down. But it will take at least 10 years. And I think we need to be careful that we don't become overconfident. I mean, one of the things that really upsets me, I don't really know whether I've ever said this publicly before, but in 1979, when Normal went after Jimmy Carter for not following his campaign promise and legalizing cannabis, as far as I'm concerned, they, by being overconfident, they set the legalization of the medicinal use of cannabis back by 25 or 30 years. Wow. And we just can't allow ourselves to let up our attention for a minute, because the neo-prohibitionists are scared to death of people thinking. They're scared to death of people having a medicine that they can take the responsibility for their own health and wellness and treating disease. The minute that we think that we have changed everybody's minds and that the politicians aren't going to try to undercut us, we've basically hastened our own demise, really.
I think we're actually in safe hands. Chris is not letting up. So
hey, I want to also just to clarify that incident you referred to. Yeah, Normal in New Zealand, we have the same name, but not the same crowd. But
because
most people there probably aren't aware of what happened, which was Jimmy Carter's drug guy was outed by Normal as using coke at one of their parties, and it was because he didn't legalize, and they went, "Screw you, we're going to out your guy," and that meant all the politicians, all the professionals, just wouldn't talk to them. It kind of might have led to the war on drugs. In the 80s, right? Wow. Terrible thing in hindsight.
Yeah, yes.
And it just kind of shows you can't kind of reject the offer of that say Jimmy Carter, he was going to do something. They rejected it because it wasn't enough. They wanted perfect.
Right, and I can tell you this about Carter. Carter had no political clout at that point. The gas prices had gone through the roof. It was something that Nixon did, but it had a certain lag period, so it affected Carter, and he got the blame. And so he had no political chips to play. And remember I mentioned this fellow who had been the associate deputy director of the drug czar's office, or the special action office on drug abuse prevention. He was nominated by Carter to be under secretary of defense for health, and this is a guy on our board. He had been in the Air Force, and the Air Force didn't like him for a number of reasons, mainly because he was right. He said if they cracked down on cannabis, they would have a heroin epidemic. So they cracked down on cannabis and they had a heroin epidemic. But there were other reasons why they didn't like him. They thought he was against the war in Vietnam, and they knew that he treated all human beings like human beings. And so they were able to block his even having a hearing, before the committee that says, okay, you can go on and we'll have a full vote. So Carter had to withdraw this man's nomination. And after it was withdrawn, the American Medical Association wrote a little article criticizing Carter for doing that. And it's the same kind of thing. I mean, I think that Stroop probably realizes now that not only did he way overplay his hand, but that Carter's options were incredibly limited at the time. I mean, I'm saying that with the benefit of 2020 hindsight over 40 years.
What lessons have we got from that more recent period? Because here we've got a government that wants to do it. One of our main mottos is don't fuck it up, because they want to do it, right? They want to do a good job. And one of the big risks is that we ourselves screw it up, right? Like what we've just been talking about. Right. But really, if we look forward to this medical cannabis scheme coming, it's got to be in place by the end of this year.
Mm-hmm.
What's the main lesson that we, both as a campaign and maybe for the government, what's the lesson that we learn from overseas so that patients can actually get access at the end of this year like they're promising, and we're not just then still talking about it in 5 years' time?
Hmm. Well, I guess my glib answer is don't reinvent the wheel. And I think that that's the problem in the States, that trying to reinvent the wheel, that they're over-regulating and over-taxing. After all, don't forget that cannabis was in the United States pharmacopoeia from the 1850s until 1942, and it got treated like any other medication. And my advice is, treat it like any other medication. You know, I mean, it's not rocket science here. You might want, if a doctor is going to prescribe more than a handful of prescriptions or recommendations, you might require that he have 8 hours of Category 1 continuing medical education on the endocannabinoid system and cannabis and cannabinoids, something like that. I mean, but that's the kind of regulation you need, is a regulation that recognizes that it's a medicine. And you want to have you want to allow every prescription pharmacy in the country to dispense cannabis. Why not? I mean, when it was in the United States Pharmacopeia, the pharmacists were perfectly able to do that, and they're perfectly able to do that now. I mean, what it is, it's a threat to the pharmaceutical companies, because cannabis isn't a single molecule drug. You can't really manufacture it. Well, if you want to manufacture each individual cannabinoid, that the price will be outrageous. But even making one cannabinoid, the price is much greater. The plant does it much more cheaply, you know. The more that we treat this like we would any other medication, you didn't see people running wild in the streets, even though Harry Anslinger was running around saying that that's what would happen in the 1920s and 1930s. In the 1920s, American physicians, you don't have to come to my talk anymore. This is the talk. So in the 1920s, when the American physicians wrote 3 million prescriptions a year that contained cannabis. And in 1937, the spokesperson for the American Medical Association testified before the House Ways and Means Committee that the AMA knows of no dangers to the medical use of cannabis. That was at a time that had been used for 70 years and millions of prescriptions a year were being written. And the guy that was doing the testifying had an interesting resume. When I first, got into this, I thought, well, maybe he was just some doctor, from the backwoods or whatnot. No. He had been the commissioner of health for Washington, D.C. from 1893 to 1903. And he'd been the health commissioner to 1913, and then the health commissioner of Boston from 1913 to 1919, past president of the American Public Health Association, a doctor and an attorney, and he'd been the AMA's chief legal counsel since 1924. And he knew where all the bodies were buried. And, I mean, he knew what the hell he was talking about. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that that impressed me was he took off on about a two-paragraph tirade on why they shouldn't call the Marijuana Tax Act the Marijuana Tax Act, because nobody knew what they were talking about. Which, of course, was the whole idea. He said, if you do pass this over the objection of the American Medical Association, call it the Cannabis Tax Act.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, they didn't want
to do it. Least derogatory.
Huh?
Least derogatory, I guess, as well.
It was meant to confuse people.
Yeah, right. Different language.
I mean, this... In my opinion, and I think we talked about this last night, the Marijuana Tax Act was the work of the petrochemical industry.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't the work of Harry Anslinger. It wasn't the work of Hearst. I mean, they, in terms of the Marijuana Tax Act, in my opinion, they're bit players. I mean, Anslinger did not have the political clout to move the Marijuana Tax Act the rapid way that it went through Congress so it would raise the least objection. And that was DuPont. And DuPont, I think, was the point man for the petrochemical industry.
Oh, yeah.
And DuPont had, what was DuPont concerned about? DuPont had just developed nylon, which is a synthetic, and of course you can make synthetics out of hemp.
Yeah.
You don't need to make synthetics out of hemp, it's just fine natural fiber. Mm-hmm. They also had the North American rights to rayon, similarly made out of cellulose, and the hemp herd, the waste product from when you're raising cannabis for fiber or, frankly, raising it for medicine, is the interior core, the hemp herd. And it's all cellulose. So the DuPont made cellophane. That's a synthetic made out of cellulose. They also made sulfites that you can make paper out of wood pulp and out of hemp, but you need to use four times as much to make paper out of wood pulp as you do out of hemp.
Yeah.
Finally, they also made tetraethyl lead, an additive to gasoline. And they were the largest shareholder in General Motors, who were the competitors to Ford. And Ford had always thought the cars should run on ethanol, preferably hemp ethanol. And in the late 30s, he had a prototype car whose skin was made out of an acrylic embedded with hemp that had upholstery made from hemp, and of course it ran on hemp ethanol. Sweet. And DuPont could hardly say...
Was it the hemp mobile?
It was a Ford hemp-mobile, if you will.
Sweet.
And there's an iconic picture of Ford with a sledgehammer wailing away at one of the fenders, and the sledgehammer just bounces back.
Wow.
You know, yeah.
Hey, so, David Behrman, MD, mate, we could probably listen to you chat all afternoon, but we actually need to get on with the rest of the show. I'm so sorry. But what are your movements, and where can people catch you?
All right, they can if they want me, my website, you know, www.davidbehrmanmd.com. If they're interested in our organization, they might go to www.aacmsite.org. AACM, American Academy of Cannabinoid Medicine. And then if you're interested in my book, you can Google me and just go to Cannabis Medicine. I also have another book that has a lot of history in it, that for people who are history buffs and are willing to pick up a 3-pound book, it's called Drugs Are Not the Devil's Tools, Greed, Discrimination, the War on Drugs, and How Medicinal Cannabis is Changing the Paradigm. So I encourage everybody out there who's listening to get educated, and if you're a patient, tell your doctor about cannabis. In my opinion, you're telling your doctor that you've used it, or you have friends that use it, or you're interested in using it. It's one of the most important things that you can do to have drug policy reform here in New Zealand.
Right on.
All right. And tonight you're speaking at AUT tonight, Chris. Have you got this?
Right, from 7 o'clock. It's room WA220, I believe, and that's AUT tonight. And there's still a few seats there available, I think. So come on down. And then a bit of a tour going on: Golden Bay on the 30th, Nelson on the 2nd, Christchurch on the 3rd and 4th.
Absolutely, and I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, what I found is that the people here are eager to learn. They ask important questions, and when they get the answer, I think they know what to do with it, you know, in terms of whether it's a political activism or going home and taking care of their own ills or the ills of their loved ones.
Dr. Behrman, what a treat. Thanks so much for coming up, mate. Really appreciate it.
Do it, man.
That was Marijuana Meat.